Good morning. I'm going to call the meeting of the Ag Policy Committee to order. It's 8:15, and we've got a full day ahead of us, and we're happy. We're all in smiles because it's Milk Day at the Capitol, and so we're excited about that. And I just wanted to call the meeting to order. The roll call will be noted by the clerk, and I believe we do have a quorum. And we have the approval of the minutes, and I'm going to ask Representative
Madam Chair, I'll move to approve the minutes.
All right. Representative McNamer moves the minutes, and all those are approved. We will now move to Dairy Day. Welcome, Minnesota Milk, to the Capitol, to the meeting here. And if you would introduce yourself, we'd appreciate it.
Madam Chair, I am Patrick Luneman, dairy farmer from Todd County, Minnesota, and also president of the Minnesota Milk Producers. Well, it's good to be here this morning in front of the committee. Most of the time I get to be last on the agenda, and the chair put me right up front today, so I'm thrilled to have to be ready and get everyone awake here this morning. I want to talk to you first about the state of dairy in Minnesota. And last year, in 2012, dairy production was up 4%, which is quite a step considering that we had drought across our state, and it was rather difficult economically for some of the months because of the high costs that we had. We were able to keep stable cow numbers at 465,000 cows, and those cows reside on 3,900 licensed dairy farms across the state. And Minnesota is wonderful in that we've got all types and kinds of dairy farms across the state. We've got the small, the medium, the large, the traditional, the organic, every type of farmer that, you know, we can think of out there to provide what our consumers want. Something to note, and I've stated this before, is that each cow provides about $25,000 of economic activity to our state. So that being noted, we'd like more cows, which would provide more economic activity and more jobs. Something else that Minnesota does is provide milk that goes towards dairy exports. $218 million of product moved overseas in dairy exports this past year. And nationally, we just keep rising as far as amount of dairy products that are exported. We're above 13% in the amount of dairy products nationally that are sent overseas. The markets are growing for our product, and so we see a vast opportunity for Minnesota to be part of that export game, not only providing for our people here in the States, but also worldwide. I said Minnesota had a difficult time, dairy producers had a difficult time because of high costs. Milk prices were rather low last spring and summer. A lot of the high cost came from the high cost of feed. But I can tell you that in Minnesota we are well positioned because we grow so much of our own feed. In fact, our producers out there who do grow much of their own feed came through this past year very well, and it was a good year for them economically. Now, as we talk about the drought, and I know that's I've heard from some of you as legislators the concern that you have, it is a concern because we go into this year with short hay supplies and we still have high feed prices. So it's something that we'll have to watch this coming summer, and hopefully we'll have the timely rains that will provide for a good crop. Dairy is returning to the Midwest, but as I said, our cow numbers are stable. We're seeing cows moving back to Wisconsin. Their numbers are growing there. Numbers of cows are growing in Iowa and South Dakota. What we're seeing is kind of a horseshoe effect around Minnesota, and it's something that we need to be watchful for. Why is this happening? In fact, I believe it may be something that the dairy industry will take a look at from an economist point of view this year, and so don't be surprised if we come back to you next year sometime saying, here's why. We don't have that data yet, but I do believe that we may be taking a look at that. And why is Minnesota different? We believe it's a good state to dairy, but there are some things happening that we need to be aware of. as we work together, how do we, with you as the legislature and other parts of Minnesota and our dairy industry, work together to enhance and recharge our industry? That is a goal that we need to take on. And how do we bring in the next generation? And we have a video for you at the end of my presentation that hopefully, if we can get, is it there yet, Ted, or we'll see? Okay. But but anyway, if we're able to view that, it shows you the next generation, if we can get more people like this, and I'll talk about that at the end of my presentation. The environment. I know a lot of legislators are also talking about, you know, how do we make sure that our water and our land and our air is suitable for everyone in the state. I want you to know that as dairy farmers, we're just as concerned about that as anyone else is. We live on our farms, we breathe the air, we drink the water. And I must say that as the years have gone by, and in my 30-some year career, we've made a lot of changes. And a lot of that has come from the science that we've been able to learn from. We've become better stewards. And there are obviously things that we need to continue to improve on, and there are things that we do today that we don't know, but we need to continue to fund the science of how do we become better stewards. Dairy farmers do provide something to our environment. We talk about the monocultural crops that we have, the corn and the soybeans and corn. Well, if you mix dairy farms into that landscape, it brings grass, it brings alfalfa, it brings other crops to provide a better rotation, which is just much better for our soils. And then we talk about cow manure. You can't ignore that when you're on the farm. And as dairy farmers, I want you to know that manure is a resource that is too valuable to waste. And pardon my pun there. But with the price of fertilizer, I certainly do on my farm. I make sure that every ton gets to the right spot so that we can grow our crops in an efficient, effective manner, and that none of it goes to waste. In fact, I've got neighbors who are always asking, do you have any extra? Because they know how valuable it is, and the goal is to get it put where it needs to be, where the science tells us through soil testing and other means that this is where manure needs to be. So that's come a long way in my career, and I'm proud that we've been able to make good changes. We have the Discovery Farms here in Minnesota, which is doing research on groundwater and soils, and I want you to know that there's some great research that's coming from that. There's more to come, and we need to make sure that we keep those Discovery Farms well funded. Hopefully we can have more farms added to the mix. I know we've added a dairy farm to the mix, I believe, in Stearns County this past year. Those Discovery Farms provide meaningful research, and it's something that we need to keep on the front burner. On the regulatory side of the environment, we do need to update rules to create a more efficient and compliance and permitting process. We have a number of dairy producers that still have difficulty with the permitting process. And as an industry, I want you to know that we do understand the need for environmental compliance. We're with you on that. We want to make sure that we do things right and that there is a reason for the process, so to speak. But many producers are finding the process of the permitting difficult, and oftentimes the producers that are having the most difficulty with it are the small to medium producers. As they try to make changes on their farms, and maybe they haven't made a change for a number of years, they're finding that it's almost overwhelming at times to go through that process. Some of our larger farmers sometimes have had more practice, or they have the means to bring in outside help, So I just want you to know that we need to make sure that our process is streamlined. We recently met at Minnesota Milk with the MPCA Commissioner John Stein, had a great discussion on what I just talked about. Previously, we talked with Commissioner Austin. We have a good working relationship with Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And between pollution control and our local authorities, you know, we want to continue to have dialogue and improve the process. And I just want you to know that you know, the legislature needs to be a part of that, too, as they look at any regulation improvements or down the road some changes. And then a goal in that is that we save time and dollars, and I know that the legislature is always looking to save dollars. Livestock investment grant. We had $1 million allocated to that in the past year, and the application process just finished up in January. There were 325 grant applications, and we don't know exactly how many will be funded yet, but it looks like there will be about 80 to 100, and the grants are in process. It looks like a lot of the grants, according to the applications that have come in, are going to go to small to medium-sized producers, and there's like $86 million of investment in our industry that is looking for this livestock investment grant. So the point I'm trying to make here is that seed money to create investment in our industry that's so critical. We have some things happening in the industry that are size neutral, so to speak. Our small to medium dairy farms are looking at robotic milkers. In fact, one of the grant applications that was sent in made $1 million investment for their 120-cow dairy. And robots are expensive, but it takes care of the labor end of milking, and it's just an incredible, incredible technology. And it could transform the dairy industry in Minnesota, especially for our small to medium-sized producers, because it's size neutral. So the robots, there's one robot for every 60 cows that are milked. So if you have a herd of 60 cows, it's just perfect. Or if you're at 50, maybe you make the changes to have 60 to 70 cows. Or it goes in multiples. Maybe you have 120. So it works out quite well. I don't have a robot milker on my farm, but I have robotic calf feeders. And those little calves get to come to the feeder, and they get to nurse just like they're nursing on their mother. And the computer says, no, you're not going to. It says, nope, you can't have any right now. It knows when the calf is eaten, when it should eat. It will tell us. It'll tell me. I can go to my PC, and it'll say, these calves haven't eaten today. You better check them out. And that same process goes for the robotic milkers. The cow, if you tell it, the robot, that it should be milked four times that day, it'll milk the cow four times. If the cow doesn't come four times, it will let you know as the dairy farm owner. So there are things coming through science and technology that are just incredible that could help our dairy industry a lot. And we want to thank you for the Livestock Investment Grant as being part of the seed money to get some of this reinvestment in Minnesota going, and I hope that you continue the program. Legislative tax reform. As I read the newspapers and listen to the press, we know that tax reform is on your agenda, and I know it's not specifically this committee's decision to make on some of that, but you're all involved in the process. And the one thing that I would like you to consider as you go through the process is how will it affect the capital investment in our industry? As changes are made, and maybe there's some things that we're taxing now, maybe those need to be made for the better as we make reinvestment in our industry. But the one thing that I want you to surely consider is how do we compare to the surrounding states? As we have an industry that's not just state, but it's Midwest and it's national, how do we compare? Please make that consideration. The Dairy Research and Consumer Education Authority, you provided funding for that last year. Some of you were very instrumental in getting the authority approved. So we have funding to do the task force this year. The task force is just about ready to start its work. And we don't have anything for you this year, but hopefully the task force will have some recommendations by next year's session. As we go into a bonding year, we hope that you will consider supporting that Consumer Research and Education Authority. We believe that it's very, very important for Minnesota's industry that we have a place for meaningful research to take place in our state. We have some great researchers at the University of Minnesota, but they really don't have a good place to ply their trade. So we need to have some new brick and mortar. We need to have some new facilities for teaching, and we hope that you support that, although I will say again that we have nothing on the agenda for this year, but it will be coming. The raw milk issue, I don't know that that's going to come up to the legislature this year, but I want you to know that Minnesota Milk Producers supports the law as it currently stands, where a consumer can go to a farm and purchase raw milk directly from the producer. But we believe that it's best to leave the law as is. We've come a long way in food safety in our country. 100 years ago, before there was pasteurization, the infant mortality rate was high. And when a child was born, you know, the chances of them making to an adulthood were difficult. And along came pasteurization, and it's amazing when you look at the statistics how the infant mortality rate dropped. So what I'm saying is, let's not tinker with our food safety system. We know there are those that believe in the benefits of raw milk, and they're entitled to that opinion, but we need to make sure that they know where their milk comes from. They need to go to the farm so that they can be assured themselves of, is their milk being produced in a quality manner. We've got some wonderful young producers entering our industry, and in November we announced our Producers of the Year, and it's a young couple from Melrose, Minnesota. I don't even know if they're 30 years old yet. Maybe some of you know, but Glenn and Sadie Frericks, and they've worked hard for a number of years to build their farm up. They've farmed on multiple locations, but now they're settled into a spot near Melrose. And we were just pleased and privileged to announce them as our Producers of the Year this year. They're young, they're energetic, they have a vision for their future and for Minnesota dairy. And we're hoping that we can have more producers like them. And hopefully our video today will work. So Ted, this is our policy and legislation person within Minnesota Milk. Many of you know him formerly with the Department of Agriculture. You'll be seeing more of him this year.
Yes. And today he's performing an important service, and hopefully he's, you know, comes sure. through for you.
Pressure's on.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, the player is not compatible.
Yes. Yes, we're going to open it up to questions since we have the time. So, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you so much for your testimony. And, you know, it was interesting when you said how dairy cows are moving back to the Midwest. You know, you take a look at livestock production in general, whether it was dairy or whether it was hogs, when I went out to the East and the West Coast. And hogs in general, they started expanding in North Carolina because there's investors out there that saw a 40% return on investments. Now as it's getting tighter and tighter with competition and everything else, they can't produce the hog as efficient as we can out here because, like you said, it has a feed source. The same thing's happening with dairy. Plus, with the additional regulations in California squeezing out the producers out there, they are coming back here to the Midwest. But your point that you said how we've got this horseshoe effect going on, where producers are putting investments in the states around Minnesota and how you're looking into that. I see we have the commissioner and others here. I would encourage, Madam Chair, chairs, we should take a hard look at that as well. And then a little bit later in your testimony, you talked about the struggles in permitting. And one of my jobs in the pork industry, I was director of business development, so I was in charge of permitting, financing, site procurement. So you're right. We had in-house individuals that were experts, if you will, on the permitting process. And if you have the smaller producers, the mid-sized producers, they don't have that. And so is that some of the reason why we're not growing the dairy industry here? Because the permitting process can be extremely cumbersome, and so it's discouraging people. So that's a good point, and you're taking a hard look at that. And I encourage the departments to take a hard look at that as well. And then the other comment I'd like to say, you said about the value of manure. It was the University of Minnesota that posted a study where they compared manure versus commercial fertilizer all across the state. They titled it Gunk versus Gold. Manure increased corn yields by 8.1 bushels per acre. Increased corn yields, soil tilth, water holding capacity. And so this fallacy of it being a waste and farmers are not handling it correctly is just that. And it's actually become, manure has actually become a commodity where, like you're saying, your neighbors are wanting it and they're willing to pay for it. And so we've come a long way. Thank you so much for your testimony. I look forward to understanding why dairy is locating everywhere, more so than Minnesota. I look forward to that. Thank you.
And Mr. Luneman, did you have a comment for that?
Representative Hamilton, your comments are right on. You filled in the gaps in my testimony. When we look at the 1980s and 1990s, the dairy industry basically moved west. And the climate is very good out there for cows, but the feed isn't necessarily there. The feed is in the upper Midwest. But at that time, there were some things going on. Corn was $1.65, $1.80, and it was really cheap to put it on a train and send it west. And we don't have that anymore, thanks to some changes in where corn is going, so to speak. So now that feed is at a different level, it makes more sense for the cattle to be close by. When you talk about the permitting, yes, we're seeing that horseshoe effect, and hopefully we can have some discussion with the commissioner on that as well. We're actually meeting with him later today, and we have the good fortune to meet with Commissioner Fredrickson from time to time, and we'll continue to talk about that. And yes, the permitting process, as you said, can be cumbersome for those small to medium producers that don't do it every day. So, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Yes. Representative Kresha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Mr. Luneman, for your testimony. As you may know, Clarissa is very close to my district, and I was hoping, since he did such a fine job, that would count as my commercial.
I'm sorry, that's not going to work.
As a follow-up to that, one of the things that I appreciate very much about your testimony and visiting a number of dairy farms in the Todd and the Morrison County area is the level of sophistication that you've had to, the dairy industry has to come into, not just to stay competitive, but also in response to the regulatory. But what I wanted to point out, and I think it's something that we need to continue to be sensitive, is how really sophisticated you have become as an industry and as a business. And I absolutely understand the quality of life and the family farm lifestyle, but the men and women that are coming into this industry now and the ones that are doing what they're doing now and growing, it's just not simple. You just cannot be a small-time producer without competing in these. So I understand and am very sensitive to the capital investment side that you folks have to deal with, as well as the regulatory nature, and I think it's good for us to know that and to hear that from you. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
All right. Any other questions at this point? Otherwise, we have a video.
I think we're there.
Okay.
Video.
We don't have audio.
Madam Chair, we're going back 100 years to the movies without dialogue.
has seen at this dairy farm is... It's the end of the day in rural Stearns County, and the picture as seen at this dairy farm is reminiscent of days gone by. A golden glow bathes everything in warm light as Dan and Monica Frericks run and play in the yard, and the cows come in from the pasture to be milked. It is here that Glenn and Sadie Frericks raise their family and build Blue Diamond Dairy.
Blue Diamond Dairy existed in my head at least long before it ever existed in real life. Before we were engaged, before we were married, I decided that if we ever milked cows, we would be Blue Diamond Dairy.
The name held special meaning on two levels. First, it was a combination of the names of the dairies Glenn and Sadie grew up on. And second,
blue diamonds are the toughest substance on earth, and they're also very beautiful. And after farming now, I really appreciate the symbolism of the need for a certain toughness to sustain in this industry.
And if the Frericks are anything, they're tough. They bought the dairy 5 years ago while still in their 20s. 65 cows milked two times a day and 200 acres of cropland. When they first got started, some folks used a different word to describe the Frericks.
A lot of people thought we were crazy. A lot of people didn't believe in what we were doing.
But somehow, they make it work, even with two young children and another on the way. There is a simple beauty in watching the Frericks juggle it all. Blue Diamond is a mixture of old-school dairy farming and an astute use of technology. The cows are milked in a tie-stall barn with a pipeline system, but calves are fed using a state-of-the-art automatic feeder. The Frericks name all their cows, but they also closely track the herd for productivity, milk quality, and feedings.
Technology has made dairy farming a lot simpler. We can get information on milk quality, milk components. I get that text to me daily. So then we can use that information to help in the cow's diet, you know, if there's an animal health concern. The information just comes streaming in so much faster.
Any challenge the Frericks can't solve with technology is handled with a mixture of sweat, guts, and good old-fashioned hard work.
I definitely admire Glenn's work ethic. I tend to be slow and meticulous, and he tends to be expedient.
Sadie has a tremendous ability to add energy to a situation. When she gets excited or on board with a project, she takes it and runs. There's passion.
That passion to succeed is evident in both Sadie and Glenn. But these young farmers understand the importance of enjoying the journey.
Glenn is a wonderful father. As the mom, I'm the schedule enforcer and the this is what needs to be done now type parent. And Glenn is able to have, I think Glenn is the fun parent.
You don't ever schedule fun events. They just happen. You know, you feel like goofing around, and you goof around. I'd like the kids to be able to learn responsibility, respect for land and animals, have a good understanding of where their food comes from, and what's involved in producing it.
We are the next generation of the dairy industry, and I hope that we can be an example for other young people who want to start farming that it can be done, and regardless of the naysayers, I hope that we can be someone that encourages them, those young people to give it a try.
When it comes to promoting Blue Diamond or the dairy industry, it's pretty much all Sadie, along with handling the bookkeeping, helping with the milking, and taking care of the calves. Sadie runs the kids and still finds time to write for Dairy Star newspaper.
I tend to be a dreamer, and sometimes, you know, you have to have somebody that brings you back down to reality, and he's very pragmatic, very realistic.
That's kind of the way it works around here. We'll make it work. We'll figure it out.
this is our purpose. And when you're doing something purposeful or when you're doing what you're called to do, you can run the marathon every day.
Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Hamilton.
That was wonderful. Is there a chance that we can get a copy of that, all of us, a link or post it on YouTube so that we can put it out on our Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts? Because that's perfect. And you know, one of the things that I talk a lot about the concern with demonizing agriculture and stuff like that as well. And you're talking about, you know, using robotics and efficiency enhancing technologies and computers and stuff like that. And some of those things that were incorporated in large farms is the reason why people started tagging them as factory farms as well. And it takes videos like this that we all have to be willing to do, let people into our farms. Like Temple Grandin says, you know, glass walls, so that we can tell our side of the story. This is perfect. And so I would really like a link to that so that I can tweet it out and put it on my Facebook account and stuff like that. Thank you.
Mr.
It
Lindemann?
Is available, Ted just told me, at mnmilk.org. But we'll make sure that we get you that information so it's easier. There is milk available to the committee and anyone else in the room, so please make yourselves welcome to that.
Thank you, Mr. Lindemann.
Any other questions?
Do we have any other questions? Otherwise, I think we'll have the pages to start delivering the milk, perhaps, so to speak. And any other questions? But I would concur with Representative Hamilton that this was an outstanding presentation. Thank you for being very thorough and comprehensive and highlighting many areas that we all should be paying attention to. And thank you for that video. It was outstanding. It was inspiring. So I appreciate that. And I think we are not going to demonize agriculture. We're going to help to articulate the case and make sure that people understand the importance of agriculture. And that's what our purpose today and from this point forward. So I appreciate, Mr. Lindemann, that you came early and that you're able to be here and give us all of this information. And I know you have many others in the audience who are with the dairy producers, Minnesota Milk, today. So I appreciate everybody getting up early and driving up and coming and being here for the presentation. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And this is, it is Milk Day. Pass on. It is Milk Day at the Capitol, and so again, thank you for everyone who came. But we're also going to have the start of our commercial series here. We will have, David Ward. We've got another presenter, so I apologize. I saw him sitting in the audience, and I looked the other way. I apologize. Very good. We're going to kind of continue talking, so if you don't mind, we'll be probably drinking some milk as you're speaking. But welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. David Ward, Cooperative Network. I'm Director of Government Relations and Dairy for Cooperative Network. We're a two-state trade association, and we co-sponsor Dairy Day at the Capitol with Minnesota Milk. And it's kind of a perfect marriage between the two organizations. The producers of Minnesota Milk produce the fine product that you're enjoying right now. The cooperatives in Minnesota take that product, add value to it, and package it into fluid milk, cheese, yogurt, cottage cheese, and the wonderful products. And 85% of the milk that is produced in Minnesota is marketed through a cooperative. So we work very well together to add value to the dairy products that Minnesota dairy producers produce. It would be one thing to produce the milk and put it on a truck to South Dakota, Wisconsin, and allow them to have the economic benefits of turning that product into a product that can be consumed by people or bought by people in a grocery store. But it's good that we're doing it here in Minnesota, but through our cooperative system. And probably that dollar of worth of milk, that dollar turns over 4 or 5 times in the state of Minnesota because of the activities of both the dairy producers and the cooperatives that manufacture dairy products from the raw product that the producers produce. In addition to, I guess I'm here more to ask for your help. As a trade association, we surveyed our members years ago, and one of the things that was identified by our membership was the lack of adequate health insurance opportunities for Minnesota farm families. Many farm families, we were told, were leaving the farm because they did not have adequate access to health insurance, leaving the farm for off-farm jobs for the purpose of securing health insurance. Cooperatives are traditionally formed to solve their members' problems, and we looked at could we use the cooperative model to provide health insurance and health coverage for Minnesota farm families. We weren't alone in this. The United States Department of Agriculture agreed that it is a problem and need to look for innovative solutions to that problem. We received a $1.6 million grant from the United States Department of Agriculture to pursue this project in providing health insurance for Minnesota farm families. In 2007, the Minnesota Legislature, many of you in this room and your colleagues and former colleagues, passed legislation to allow us to create a pilot project of a healthcare cooperative for purposes of providing health insurance and health care for Minnesota farm families. 2010, some trailer legislation was passed that allowed us some flexibility in the pursuit of that process. In October of 2010, we submitted an application to the Department of Commerce. And because this was a new process and never been done before, we were kind of negotiating with the Department of Commerce as what needed to be asked, what needed to be in the application, and to make sure that we had all our T's crossed and I's dotted. We have met with the Department of Commerce numerous times throughout this process to try to make sure we are answering their questions. We answer their questions only to be asked more questions. 2.5 years later, we still do not have an answer from the Department of Commerce. And surprisingly, yesterday, when asked by a legislator about the process, that legislator was told that we have not submitted an application. So after 2.5 years of negotiating with the Department of Commerce, working with the Department of Commerce, we are told we haven't done anything. And it's kind of frustrating to us as an organization, the time and effort we've put into this process, only to be told that we haven't submitted an application. It's also frustrating because the same process was done, occurred on our neighbors to the east in the state of Wisconsin. They have a healthcare cooperative up and running for 6 years now, serving 2,000 farm families. All we want is an answer. If they tell us no, we'll stop spending our time, our money, and our effort in pursuit of this process project. If they tell us yes, we'll be able to move ahead and start serving Minnesota farm families. So today, as producers visit your offices, one of the things they will be asking you is to kind of notify the Department of Commerce. Let's get going. Get us an answer that we've been asking for 2.5 years now. Hopefully, through your help and through the help of the producers here today that will be asking those questions, we will get that answer that we so sorely want. In response to Representative Hamilton's question on permitting, in other states, and I'm particularly familiar with one state, they have a process in place that is predictable. It's got timelines, there's severe timelines drawn on it. And they allow the producers to get the permits on a timely basis. And one of the things that I've looked at, over 70 permits have been issued to expand livestock operations in Wisconsin in the last 5 years. After 70 permits, zero environmental problems. So I think it proves that agriculture and the environment can coexist very well. So with that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. And questions, I believe, Representative Hamilton?
Thank you. Is anybody from the Department of Commerce here? That's alarming. And if not, can we get somebody here so we can get a question answered? Or if it's not able to do it today, can we set up another meeting to get them here to get these questions answered? That'd be my question.
Any other questions? Yes. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm from the northern part of the state, about as far north as you get before you slip into Canada. And I'm not aware of any dairy operations up there. Representative Kyle or Keel, you, are there any in yours?
Yes, yes, there are.
There are a few?
Yep.
Okay. But I've seen in my years of living up there the decline of dairy. I'm wondering if, as you said, that people are looking to expand back up into that area.
Mr. Ward.
Not aware of any expansion efforts up in that area, although it, over time, you know, the farther north you got, the less dairy you would have because of the, you know, some of the climate things, some of the ability to grow crops to support a dairy operation. But through technology and through genetics and plant breeding, I think we're seeing the ability to grow those crops. Although there are a lot of beef producers, you know, cow-calf operations up in that area. So livestock does exist up in your part of the state, too. So.
Yes, Representative Erickson.
No, I'm aware of the beef cattle industry that we have up there, but as I grew up in that area, there were many, many dairy farms in Roseau County, and I don't believe there are anymore. When I moved over to Lake of the Woods County 30 plus years ago, there were many, you know, several that were there, and distance and travel. So it's not a geographical thing or a climate thing that. But I'm just wondering with the expansion that they're moving back in that direction.
Part of the frustration, and thank you, Madam Chair, part of the issue as operations left an area, they left for a variety of reasons, and some of the reasons was lack of infrastructure. No veterinarians, no, you know, milking equipment dealers. So as the industry expands, they look to areas that have that infrastructure in place. So once you lose that infrastructure, getting the infrastructure back sometimes can be an issue. That could be, you know, part of the reason why once the dairy industry left your area, it may not be coming back, because producers, when they expand now, you know, do I have a market for my milk? You know, is there a milk truck that's going to pick it up every day? Is there a veterinarian within a calling distance that, you know, if I have an issue, that he can be there within a half hour, 45 minutes of my place? If my milking machine breaks at 4 in the morning, is somebody going to come out and fix it without waiting? You know, so those things contribute to the, and once you lose that infrastructure, it's very hard to get it back.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Ward? All right. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you very much.
All right. Now, next, we on our agenda is the legislative district profile. But before we turn it over to Representative Anderson, just a couple of things to note in your packet. We do have a map of the state of Minnesota, and so as you can look to see where each of us are located, you can hopefully put the name to the location, to the district, to the importance of agriculture in that person's district. So just to keep that in mind, and hopefully you can save that in your save folder so that you'll have it in the future as we hear from each and every one of us. And Representative Kreshaw, you will be on the list at some point, so you'll have the opportunity to highlight even greater opportunities of within your district. A couple of other things. There are from the Department of Health, the Minnesota Agriculture and You, Fun Facts and Food, and the Minnesota Growing Directory. So those are things you can take with you, but it's meant to additionally highlight what we will be hearing from each of us regarding agriculture in our districts. So if Representative Anderson is ready, we would love to hear about his district.
Thank you, Chair Poppe. And my thanks to you for letting me lead off today, because Dairy Day here at the Capitol, and one of the counties I serve, Stearns County, is the leading producer of dairy milk products in the state of Minnesota. In fact, they're ranked 21st in the nation in terms of dairy production. So Stearns County, a real leader in dairy in Minnesota and in the nation. My new district is, the new number this year is called 12B, and my predecessor, Bud Heidgerken, always used to say that there are more cows in our district than people, and by golly, Bud was right. The latest statistics I could find, Stearns County is home to about 69,000 cows, and those cows produce roughly 1.3 billion pounds of milk annually. but more on that milk production later. My district also includes includes the western half of Stearns County from west of St. Cloud by Albany and going all the way to the west into Polk County, about two-thirds of Polk County. That's P-O-P-E, not Polk County, which is up north. It also goes up north into Douglas County and includes four townships just to the south and west of the city of Alexandria. The biggest cities in my district follow Interstate 94, and they are Sauk Center, Melrose, Albany, and Glenwood. An interesting fact I learned while door knocking this fall was that one of my new townships west of Alexandria, called LeGrand Township, is one of the largest townships in the state in terms of population. With a host of beautiful lakes in that area and job opportunities in nearby Alexandria, the city or the population of LeGrand is about 4,000 residents, making it nearly as large as my biggest city, which is Sauk Center. And the county seat in Polk County is Glenwood. And anybody who's driven into that city from the east on Highway 28 knows what I talk about when I say that when you come over the hill into Glenwood, it's one of the prettiest sights in Minnesota, in my opinion. When you come over that hill and catch the sun shining off Lake Minnewaska, which is the 12th largest lake in Minnesota. And right now in the wintertime, there are literally hundreds of fish houses on Lake Minnewaska. And there's a particular bay by a favorite watering hole called Crappie Town. And fishing is really popular up there, especially in the wintertime. And there's a variety of shacks up there. And the guys really enjoy their ice fishing. But getting back to the production of dairy and talking about Stearns County, the land and people are ideally suited for dairy, and in the video on the Frericks was just outstanding about the work ethic and the people that truly enjoy what they do up there. It has great soil, good soil, and rolling topography that's better suited for legume crops such as alfalfa. There's about 600,000 acres of cropland in Stearns County, and many of those acres are devoted to the production of forages for the dairy herds in the county. And to give you some idea, after Stearns County and dairy in Minnesota, Winona County is second in dairy production, followed by Morrison County, then Otter Tail, and Goodhue counties, the top dairy counties in Minnesota. And there are about 2,000 livestock operations in Stearns County. About 700 of those are dairy operations. The average farm size is about 216 acres, and the typical herd size is right around 100 cows. I found some old statistics going back to 1975. The average production per cow was about 10,000 pounds per year. And by the year 2002, that production had risen to about 18,000 pounds per cow. Today it's even higher, I guess, well over 20,000 pounds per cow. And that's a doubling of production in less than 40 years and speaks very well of the tremendous job done by today's dairy farmers. As I mentioned, Stearns County ranks first in the state in terms of cash receipts from livestock. They're second in total farm receipts. In terms of actual production, Stearns County is the top county for the production of milk. They also lead in the production of oats, hay, cattle and calves, and dairy cows. There's also a thriving turkey and broiler chicken industry in the county, and they rank second in the production of broilers and third in turkeys. Also, some major processors in the county, Genio for turkeys and Golden Plump or GMP for processing chickens. Stearns County is third in barley production, seventh in beef cows, and tenth in the production of sheep and veal or mutton. The dairy industry is also good for the local economy, as been stated earlier. Figures I found, again, the latest I found were going back to 2002, showing that the typical dairy operation, it's not all profit. They spent about $367,000 per year on inputs, and most of those are bought locally from their feed store, the veterinary service, machinery dealers, what have you, in the local communities. In figures for more recent years, as operation size has increased, corn prices, soybean meal prices much higher, that figure I'm sure is much, much higher on what the dairy farmers spend on inputs in their local communities. There are a couple of dairy processing plants located in Stearns County. Melrose Dairy Protein has a daily capacity of 3.6 million pounds of milk. That's a daily capacity. And that translates to a production capacity of 360,000 pounds of cheese every day produced at that plant. In addition, there's a Kraft plant in Albany. That plant makes a variety of Kraft food products, including spray-dried powder, blended powder, liquid grill flavors, and liquid cheese. The plant distributes these ingredients through direct customer shipments here and across the world. North America, plant ships to products to, in South America, Asia, and also in Australia. And the cheese powder made there for the famous product Kraft macaroni and cheese was first created and made in Albany back in 1966, and they still make that same cheese today, Kraft macaroni and cheese in Albany. And an idea of the economic benefit of that plant, annual payroll, about $3.3 million in salary and benefits. They employ about 80 people at that Kraft plant in Albany. So to conclude, when you drive through Stearns County and see one of the signs proclaiming that you're in dairy country, you really are in dairy country in Minnesota. And you're indeed in the heart of Minnesota, in a place we like to say is one of the best places to live in Minnesota. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. That was outstanding. I very much appreciate you. You set the bar very high. And we're all going to be now running home and getting all the facts and details and everything that we need to know about our districts, which is going to be a wonderful thing. We'll learn even more about who we represent and the industry we represent, but also to be able to educate others about that. So thank you, Representative Anderson. That was just, it was outstanding. I very much appreciate it. So I think we all learned even more today. So wonderful. So we now go from just talking about dairy to talking about the larger scope of agriculture. We do have the Department of Agriculture, and I'm very pleased to welcome today our Commissioner of Agriculture, Dave Fredrickson.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Good to be here today. Greetings, members. Last time I was here, I think, was 2 years ago. I was brand new to the department, and we had a chance to do an overview at that time, and I can't believe that 2 years have literally flown by. I still think I'm a young guy, but unfortunately I'm sliding the other direction, so... Again, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today. We have many folks from the department here, and any of the really specific questions, the in the tall grass questions that I might not be able to handle, hopefully we'll be able to ask them to come up and address any specific questions you might have. Also, congratulations to our dairy farmers across the state. I've enjoyed a working relationship with all of them. As Pat indicated, they're frequent flyers at the Department of Agriculture and I to their organization. In fact, after this meeting, I will be spending some time with them in the governor's reception room, where they will have a chance to put some of the issues that are of concern to them on the table for the governor, and so I'll be there to visit with them. Representative Anderson, I thoroughly enjoyed your presentation, given the fact that my home community is, as we say in Swift or Pope County, just up the road a piece from Lake Minnewaska, and have spent many a fine evening at I believe you referred to it as the watering hole, and so I'm familiar with that also. From a department perspective, we're here to talk just briefly about a general overview of the department. I have prepared a document that you should have in your folder. It's a little trifold, and I'd like to just sort of walk through that with you. But let me just say at the beginning, our department is functioning very well. We have approximately 430 full and part-time employees at the Department of Agriculture. I want to talk just briefly about Minnesota Ag by the numbers. We have approximately 80,000 farms in Minnesota based on the statistical analysis of those that sell more than $1,000 worth of product on an annualized basis. I was interested to note, wandering through an antique shop one day, a brochure celebrating the state centennial in 1958. And they did basically the same thing that we're doing here today, giving a picture of Minnesota by the numbers. And I was struck by one fact. In 1958, they indicated that we had 185,000 farmers in Minnesota. And so in our 100 years of or our 50 years, I guess, since that time, we're now celebrating 150 years of Minnesota statehood. We've lost 100,000 farms across the state. So, Representative Erickson, to your point, I well imagined that some of those farms existed in and around Baudette at the time, and unfortunately they're no longer there, but that is a fact of life. Our annual economic impact for farm and food sector is in excess of $74 billion. Certainly we're not the major economic driver in Minnesota anymore, but we are a significant economic driver in the state of Minnesota. We support over 340,000 jobs, direct and indirect, in the state of Minnesota. We rank sixth among all states in farm production and in ag exports. Our average size of farms today hangs in around 336 acres per for an average size operation. So when folks say we've gone larger and larger, I suppose in some cases we have, but yet our average number still hangs in that family farm, quote-unquote, structure. We rank first in a variety of crops, and I just have a snapshot here. Some are left off. We're ranking number one in the area of turkey production and certainly in the area of sugar beet production. We rank second among states for hogs, oats, sweet corn for processing. Third among states for soybeans, and actually that's possibly up just a shade this year because of the fact that we didn't experience the drought that other states across the Midwest experienced. We had, in fact, an excellent crop given the conditions that farmers were forced to grow them under, and we had an excellent quality crop. I just returned on Saturday from a trade trip to Taiwan. The Taiwanese government is very interested in the quality and certainly the quantity of our corn. Now, I know that we purchase, they purchase corn every 2 years on a major buying issue, and our hope as we traveled to Taiwan and home again was that they would commit to come to Minnesota and announce the purchase of a significant amount of corn and soybeans. 2 years ago, they made a major purchase of raw product. They'll come back again, and I hope and I think that they will come and acknowledge the quality of crop that our farmers and ranchers produced here in Minnesota this past year. And I'm getting my feet back under me again after a little bit of a jet lag coming back home. And also I can point out that while we were there, I had a representative of Minnesota corn growers and representative of Minnesota soybean growers and a Chinese speaker that has been with our department for 20 years. We were treated like royalty while we were there. And when I got home and greeted my spouse of 47 years as I came through the door, she said, "Welcome home, and by the way, the drain in the washing machine is now plugged, so get down and get to work." And so I had a quick dose of reality coming back home. And I'm actually, that's a work in progress. That hopefully I'll get it done before long. Number of our state's companies, certainly we rank number eight with in terms of the top 20 of our companies that are members of the Fortune 500, and I don't have to list them. You know who they are. Some of the key trends or conditions that we find ourselves dealing with in the area of agriculture today, consumers' high expectations for a safe food supply. And there's not a day that goes by that I'm not pleased and proud of the work of the Department of Agriculture in ensuring that we have a safe and reliable food supply in our country and in our state. We partner with the University of Minnesota, and we also are unique in that we partner with the Department of Health in that we co-locate. We're in the same building. I look across the atrium at the back of Ed Ellinger, the Commissioner of Health's head, and he looks at the back of mine, and we both agreed it is not a pretty sight. But nonetheless, we do coexist together, and it's a great opportunity. We have a wonderful building, the Orville L. Freeman Building, and I thank the foresight of committee members that were here at that time to move that forward and bring the Department of Agriculture from Plato Boulevard up here to Capitol Hill. It's a wonderful building, and I'm privileged every day to come through the door and work there. Increasing our focus on relationships between land use and the health of our environment. Of course, that is a huge 800-pound gorilla that is constantly in the room that sometimes we don't want to talk about, but I tell my farmer friends that we have to talk about it. As Representative Hamilton referred to earlier, that in the Temple Grandin comment, I remember being at that very same meeting where she said that we ought to run our farm operations as if we wanted to invite our wedding guests to them at any day, at any time. And as you saw in the video, they did. And I'm sure they would welcome their wedding guests there any day, any time. But I think it's a reminder that people watch. They watch what we do. And we have a system in Minnesota that we're very proud of and that we want to make sure that people are well aware of that and that we invite them into our facilities, into our barns, into our homes, and let them make that judgment for themselves. I serve on something called the Upper Mississippi River Basin Association. I also serve at the governor's request as chair of the Environmental Quality Board. And so I have a unique opportunity to try to bring all of those issues together and have a very strong discussion about them. I meet with the five states on a quarterly basis, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois, and Missouri, and we talk about the Upper Mississippi River. I also serve as part of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, and we meet a couple of times a year with all 50 of my colleagues across the nation, directors, commissioners, and secretaries of agriculture. And the discussion focuses on the health of the water. And I talk with my colleague in Louisiana, and he looks up the river. I talk to my colleagues from Missouri. I talk to my colleagues from Illinois, and they're concerned about the health of the river, and therefore we all need to be concerned about the health of the river. And I think that farmers obviously have a serious role to play in that, and I encourage farmers across the state to step forward and let's talk about that and see if there are things that we can do as producers from a voluntary perspective that will enhance the quality up and down the Minnesota and the Mississippi. Growing our domestic market opportunities for local and organic food, again, another priority of the Department of Agriculture, a priority of the governor. We're hopeful that through the use of the Agri Fund, which we're all thinking about, I'm sure, and have probably designs on how those resources should and could be spent. Keep in mind that at the Department of Agriculture, we're also focused on that. We presently are the home of those resources, and we can talk about that further on down through this discussion. Increasing frequencies of extreme weather patterns, including flood and drought. My commissioner colleague in Missouri is certainly well aware of the fact that water moves down the river. And when we have 300-year, 500-year floods, they've got a problem down there. So, again, water management and water quality, again, a serious issue that we need to be talking about and we need to be focusing on. Unstable commodity and input prices. I farmed for most of my life out in Swift County and farmed through the 70s, through the 80s, through the 90s. And I remember low prices. I remember them very well and survived them.
and I know high prices. I know lower and high input costs, and so we struggle with that on a day-to-day basis. But what goes up, no doubt, will come down at some point in time. I remember in 1974, I left teaching and came back to the farm. My dad was dying of leukemia, and I was the middle kid, the one that couldn't wait to get out of there, and then, of course, the one that came home when things got tough. And I remember in 1974, 1975, soybeans, Representative Falk at that time, it was $10 a bushel. And I thought, this is wonderful. And my dad said, son, agriculture will never be bad again. I remember I bought seed beans from the Carlson brothers for $10 a bushel, and I thought, I can't believe this. It's a lot of money. Well, my dad was wrong. Things went the other way. And, of course, it's too bad that he didn't live long enough to be able to see 2010 and 2011 and 2012. He would have been stunned by it. And so we need to understand that. We need to be aware of that, and we need to be prepared to deal with those ups and downs of a unstable market. Continuing growth in international markets, we have a strong case to make in terms of our export opportunity. Take, for example, corn. We have basically three spigots that we deal with. We deal with an export opportunity, we deal with a strong livestock sector and a feed sector, and certainly we deal with a very strong ethanol production center here in Minnesota. I was part of that discussion starting in 1986. When we moved forward, I at the time was a member of the state Senate, we moved forward with a piece of legislation that required every gallon of gasoline to have 10% ethanol. Today, of course, no good deed deserves to go unpunished, and so we're at a point where that's putting some serious pressure on livestock. But at that time, remember that one of the goals of increased ethanol production was to provide an opportunity for farmers to add value to their product. And sometimes we forget that, because value at time was $1.60-1.70 a bushel. And all of our detractors continue to say, you know, it's just too bad you farmers can't figure out a way to add value. And so we did. We are dealing today with an industry that will produce if asked, in excess of a billion gallons of ethanol. That's a strong market for corn producers in Minnesota, and we don't want to lose that opportunity. But with that comes also a sense of responsibility for our friends in our livestock industry, and also for water and water usage in the state of Minnesota. So, again, no good deed deserves to go unpunished. Our services at the Department of Agriculture, we provide a long list of services to Minnesota farmers and consumers. Among many efforts, the department inspects the entire chain of food production in Minnesota. We inspect what's not on the plate. The Department of Health inspects what's on the plate. It gets a little interesting at times. For example, you all have a convenience store in your district. We inspect that. You have a grocery store. We inspect that. However, if the grocery store has a deli, and the deli generates more than 51% of the income for the grocery store, then health gets to inspect that. And so it's an interesting structure, but I think it's a workable structure. We share responsibility with the Department of Health, and literally no stone goes unturned to serve the food safety interests of Minnesotans. I had a chance this year, and I know that all of us have a chance to spend some time at the Great Minnesota Get-Together. And I was so struck by, I had a chance to shadow one of our inspectors, wondering, you know, what goes on out at the State Fair? How do we make sure that we have no foodborne illness outbreak? And we have it. And that is a credit to the Department of Health and the Department of Agriculture. You've all had, what's the name of that cookie place out there? Sweet Martha's. Sweet Martha's. And I love those big buckets of Sweet Martha cookies, as you can tell.
But I shadowed our inspector as he went through Sweet Martha's, and let me tell you, you could eat off the floor in Sweet Martha's cookies. And this is not a commercial for Sweet Martha's, but it's a commercial for the great work that they have done to ensure the safety of those cookies as they go out the door, bucket load after bucket load after bucket load. Our inspector is there testing the water temperature, testing the freezer temperature, and the list goes on and on and on to the great work that the department does to ensure food safety, particularly at the state fair, which is a good place to do that. We educate producers, suppliers, and consumers on proper production and handling of food product. We educate Minnesotans about our environmental hazards to keep our farms, our homes, and our businesses and our neighbors safe. We promote the consumption of Minnesota-grown foods. And so we have a wonderful label, the Minnesota-grown label. Producers work with us and work very hard to gain access to that label because it is a tool for them to increase their marketing opportunity of Minnesota-grown products. We support the export, certainly, of Minnesota crops and livestock, and I indicated the most recent trade trip that we just completed. Duties and responsibilities of the department fall under Chapter 17 for those of you that actually crack those blue books that you have in your office, and you can take a really hard, serious look at duties and responsibilities. And it's very clearly stated in Chapter 17 that the Department of Agriculture is responsible for the global promotion of ag products. We also have the Department of or DEED. They are also responsible for promoting Minnesota products. But the wisdom of the legislature several years ago said we want the Department of Agriculture to be the primary party to promote international sale of products, and so we take that statutory obligation very seriously. The role of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, on the second page, I've listed quality of life, and we go to our mission. Our mission is to enhance Minnesota's quality of life by ensuring the integrity of our food supply, the health of our environment, and the strength of our agricultural economy. I think it is generally specific and specifically general, but it is a mission statement that I wholeheartedly embrace and take very seriously, particularly those three very specific issues that we are to address: the integrity of our food system, the health of our environment, and the strength of our ag economy. That means we're closing down, doesn't it?
Just that.
Expenditures by source of funds, you'll see that our general fund for last year, about 61% goes toward payroll and programs, about 39% for pass-through. General fund, 39% for pass-through. General fund for 14 and 15 is speculated to be 59% payroll and programs, about 41% pass-through. You'll notice the pie chart, the source of funds. The total of those is approximately $155 million on a biannual basis. Those were the sources or the expenditures during those 2 years. Our general fund runs about $61.7 million, and that is fairly consistent, and that's the issue that we deal with in our finance committee, and we will start that discussion, I believe, tomorrow. Dedicated funds, again, amounts to about $56.6 million out of the $155 million. And I'm reluctant to give you a flat-out number because that number does, in fact, change some because of our federal contribution and also some of the pass-through and the legacy monies. But in that general ballpark, right now, that if you added those up, it would be $154.8 million. About us, we are four departments. We are dairy and food inspection. Dr. Kassenborg is here and is the lead in that division. Their responsibility is to enforce state law and regulation related to the production, processing, and sale of milk and other dairy products. And you can read as well as I can about us. Pesticide and fertilizer, Greg Bozicki is also here. Greg is a known quantity over at the department, has been around for around 84 years and continues to still be here. So thank you for your service, Greg. Plant protection. Geir is a native from Norway and came here with his parents. His parents got tired of it and went back to Norway, but Geir decided to stay here. So we're so pleased to have Geir here as head of our plant protection division. No, this is a little quiz. You should have this packet in front of you, and if anyone on the committee can identify that ugly bug, I have for them their own personal ugly bug in this jar that they could take home and put on their shelf. I'm shocked. Well, I'll give you a clue. There's three words that are associated with it. The first one is brown. Actually, four. The second one is marmorated. The third is stink. And the fourth is... Wow! Who said it first? Gee.
Well, that's okay.
Your own, this is a little bit out of character, I know, Madam Chair, please forgive me, but I want to present to you your own personal brown marmorated stink bug.
I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. While we, Madam Chair, chuckle about that a little bit, it is a serious threat to our apple producers, to a variety of product producers here in Minnesota, and I want you to know that we are vigilant and we're ever watchful. I often think of those of you that are old enough to remember Gunsmoke, when they opened up the show. Representative Dill, you're nodding. It said being the marshal of Dodge City is a chancy job, makes a man watchful and a little lonely. And that, unfortunately, is Gear's responsibility. He's always vigilant for brown, marmorated stink bug.
TV land at noon. Okay, we've got another commercial.
That's right.
Upon the commercial.
Our lab services, you had the opportunity, and I apologize for not being here, but Gary Horvath is the director of the Minnesota our lab, which we operate in conjunction with the Department of Health, and it is a wonderful building. And we're so proud of it, and certainly proud of the work that we are doing and continue to do. Again, the lab has affiliations around the state. They work closely with the University of Minnesota, and I also want you to know they work very closely with Team Diarrhea, which is a very, very important academic team at the University of Minnesota. No, this is a layup for somebody. But, egg marketing and development, again, a very important division of the Department of Agriculture. Our support for Minnesota Grown, I believe, is very, very, very appropriate and strong, and encourage members of the legislature to always keep that at the forefront. Our biennial budget changes on the last page. Just in general, our lab operation and quality control, we really only have one area that we're asking for resources, and that is in additional support for our lab. Our lab is part of our building is actually owned by the St. Paul Port Authority. Don't know why that occurred years ago, but we are in a rent-to-own, the state is, a rent-to-own situation. Our rent is fairly steep in that building. We're actually asked the Department of Admin to look at some renegotiating opportunities on the bonds, and I think that's a possibility, so we should be able to see some net savings after the renegotiation of that. However, we're charged for square footage in the lab, just like we're charged for square footage in our office building. And the lab, of course, has highly sensitive equipment, very technical equipment, plus the need to maintain or achieve and maintain International Standards Organization accreditation. We have different water filtering systems within the structure of the lab. And so what we're asking is that the legislature recognize that and assist us in covering the cost of maintenance and operation at the lab. We're hopeful that in the future, and I've talked to Commissioner Cronk about this, that we can roll this into the annualized rental rate rather than have to come to the legislature year after year and say, look, we have a different structure in our lab. It should be treated differently than our office facilities. So that is our ask. Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification is a program that we have instituted at the department. And again, that goes back to a memo of understanding that Secretary Vilsack, Lisa Jackson, formerly head of EPA, and Governor Mark Dayton signed about 12 months ago that asked us to move forward with an ag water quality certification that basically says, in response to farmers saying, every time we do something, you move the goalpost. We said, all right, if that's a fact, what do you want? Well, we want to make sure that when a regulation is put in place, that we have some certainty that that regulation will continue to be in place and it will not be asked to do something else. And so that's the basis of the MOU. We've been working on it. Commissioner Wallman has been point on it and has worked diligently to pull it together. I believe tomorrow you'll have a presentation on all of our legacy monies that we're being asked to put forward next year. But we're really pleased with the work so far on ag water quality certification. I, again, spend time with my colleagues from the National Organization of State Directors of Ag, and they're all watching this. This is the only program in the nation that is voluntary, and it's the only program in the nation that will work with farmers and provide them some certainty. And it's modeled after a program in the western states, sage grouse, near at a point where it was about to go on the endangered species list. Ranchers said, we don't want that. We want to work with you to make it happen. They said, okay, if you do this and this and this, we'll ensure that it won't go on the, if we can move those numbers up, it won't go on the endangered species list. And so they did simple things like putting a piece of siding on a barbed wire fence so the sage grouse doesn't see the fence, they fly right into it. I mean, there's no rancher out there that wants a bunch of dead sage grouse hanging on their barbed wire fence. And so a simple thing like that actually brought the sage grouse population back up, and ranchers are very proud of that, and they were able to do that through a voluntary program to assist in bringing that up and making sure that sage grouse did not go on the endangered species list. So there are things we can do. And based on that model, we felt that this that model would provide incentive for us to move forward. What's the option? The option, obviously, would be stiffer regulation from the federal government. We don't want that. We think we can handle it this way. And so it will be to enhance best management practices on watersheds across Minnesota. We'll look at possibly three watersheds, probably one in the southeastern part of the state, probably one in the northwestern part of the state, probably one in the central part of the state, could be one in the northeastern part of the state. I'm not sure, but that is our focus at this time, and that's the direction that we will move forward. Our other ask will be commercial ag waste technical licensing. Presently, we have three entities, really. And this was something that the commercial waste applicators brought to us and said, we think we need to tighten this down a little bit. We think we need to ensure that all of the people involved with commercial waste have instructions and have a license, and we will have a higher level of comfort because a variety of folks out there are doing this and that we feel are not licensed, are not technically trained, I'm sorry. So. Right now, the applicator has a license. We would like to see, and they would like to see, the company that owns the application business licensed and educated, and also the site manager. So if you have a livestock production facility with PIT, that site manager should be able to understand how these pipes go together, how you move product from the pits to the tanker, and then that tanker should be able, or that applicator should be able to take that load, go out and apply it, and be thoroughly instructed on the proper way to handle that, plus the company. And this, again, is something that the applicators ask for, and we agreed with them that we should do this. So that's, we will move forward, and that will be $74,000 for our ag fund, and then of course our clean water fund. And you can read those areas. Those will be renewed areas that we have been involved in the past and hope to continue to be involved in the future. Madam Chair, I've gone on ad nauseum maybe, but nonetheless, that's sort of a snapshot of the department today. I'm so pleased and proud of the folks that we have over there. We also were blessed because you all determined 2 years ago that agriculture should rise above the partisan debate, and the department should rise above it, and you you ensured that our budget was intact. And so we worked while everyone else did not during the shutdown. And when I would go to some of the meetings, cabinet meetings, try to come in the back door and just sort of hide because I had a big target on my back. But I was so pleased that both the Senate and the House and the governor concurred that we want to make sure that the department continues to function, that our food safety work continues to function without a glitch. And I just want to take the opportunity to thank all of you that were there to support that.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for the Commissioner? Tomorrow we actually will have a continued discussion about the Department of Ag with regards to what they're seeking in the Governor's proposal. And so we'll have some time to be able to digest this a little bit and talk a little bit more about it. And certainly the Commissioner may be coming back at future times as well. So
I suspect.
Thank you. All right. So
waiting
that
for Representative Falk to take his shot. What? Representative Falk and I are from the same community. Our families came to that area in about 1873-74, and so I know this guy, and I know him very well. And you know, if he messes with me too much, I'm gonna tell his mother.
There you have it. Hey, excellent. Thank you, Commissioner. Just a reminder, if you want to save the materials, the statewide map, so we've got that in the future. The Department of Ag information that we received today is helpful to save as well, because we'll be going over that tomorrow. I wanted to make a note that, again, thank you to the Minnesota Milk people that were here today. Thank you, Representative Anderson, for his presentation as well. And to the Commissioner, we do have this evening, the Minnesota Agri-Growth Council has their legislative reception, and they're asking all of us to attend if possible. It's from 5 to 8 p.m. at 317 on Rice Park Event Center. I know that they're concerned about the parking down there, but some of us who are from Greater Minnesota live in the downtown area and should be able to walk to the event. But keep in mind that that's from 5 to 8 this evening, and they would appreciate as many legislators as possible to attend that. So if you didn't see this card before, you want to see it, you certainly can come up to look at that. Otherwise, I think, yes, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, I know that Representative Anderson, who was clearly the winner of identifying the insect as the bug, would probably want a fact sheet regarding the brown marmorated stink bug. And I believe Greta has one in hand, or I'm sorry, Gear has one in hand, so that you will be now the expert in brown marmalated, not marmalade, marmorated stink bug.
Okay.
And
thank
we'd
you.
Like to see that in a prominent location in your office.
And perhaps Representative Anderson will be able to give another presentation about, you know, he's so good at this now, we might have him do that.
Madam Chair, I thought this could be a traveling trophy for whomever gives their advertisement.
Oh, that's a great idea. Thank you. All right. Well, with all of that, we've had a very productive day, a very educational day. Thank you so much for attending, and meeting adjourned.